Welcome to the Arbitration Conversation with Amy Schmitz.
Hello, and welcome to the Arbitration Conversation. In this Arbitration Conversation, we are going to talk to a leader in commercial arbitration, international arbitration from Toronto, Canada. Today we have Mr. Douglas Harrison. He's acted as presiding arbitrator, co-arbitrator, and sole arbitrator in many, many arbitrations, including ad hoc and institutional, with ICDR Canada, ICDR International, as well as Stockholm Chamber of Commerce. And he's been working in this area with both arbitration and mediation for a very long time. In fact, he's the chair of the Toronto Commercial Arbitration Society, and I had the real pleasure of meeting him this summer in Toronto and had an opportunity to see what they're doing at the Toronto Commercial Arbitration Society, really at the leading edge. And it was very impressive, and I really wanted to talk with Douglas. So first of all, thank you for taking time with me. I've been wanting to interview you for some time now.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Amy. Thank you for inviting me.
So first of all, I guess I wanted to hear more about your gold standard course and what you're doing at the Toronto Commercial Arbitration Society.
Great. Well, we're a group of, right now our membership is about 165 lawyers and non-lawyer arbitrators working in the commercial realm. One of the things we offer to people is the gold standard course on commercial arbitration. It's a 40-hour course that runs from September until the spring. Once every 2 weeks, we have a session. There's, I think, 16 or 17 sessions. And most of the students are lawyers who have maybe 10, 15 years experience, maybe just in litigation, and they want to learn about arbitration, or they want to learn more about arbitration. And the course involves a lot of workshopping, the writing awards based on certain scenarios. There's a final exam. And if you pass, you can then apply to get the qualified arbitrator designation from the ADR Institute of Canada, which is based in Toronto. So it's a way to get certified.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's a wonderful entree, a way for individuals to get that opportunity. You know, what other sort of programming do you do at the Toronto Commercial Arbitration Society in your role as chair?
Well, once a year, we have an annual conference, which is free to our members. And we usually have two or three panels to discuss current events, you know, current issues in arbitration. Last year, for example, we had a panel that talked about whether or not arbitrators could sanction counsel for misconduct, and we had a lawyer from a woman from Calgary, Alberta, who had recently had a case of that nature where the federal court had said that it was perfectly all right for a tribunal in a NAFTA case to sanction counsel for a conflict of interest. And we had another speaker who was a lawyer from New York who had again run into a similar situation and had a case to talk about. So it was timely and interesting. And so we do that once a year in the spring. And then periodically through the year, we'll have educational events. We try to have regular dinners, informal dinners. We're having one coming up in a couple of weeks that we're calling it Beef Night, so people can come and express their beefs about the world of arbitration. And another thing we do is every once in a while we have a brown bag lunch where we get a leading arbitrator to come in and just have an informal Q&A session with anyone who's interested around the table. We call that Ask an Arbitrator, and that's been a very popular program as well.
Wow, that's really cool. Well, and also, you know, with your practice, it really is amazing how much you've done and sort of how you've really become specialized and have been able to do a lot with international arbitration as well. And I wondered if you could speak a little bit to your journey of really honing your craft in international arbitration.
Sure. Well, I was a lawyer at a big law firm called Stikeman Elliott. And back in the early 90s, we got retained by, it was a lawyer from, I believe it was Bingham McCutcheon in San Francisco who came to us because he had a client who was a Korean company, and they had a dispute with an American distributor of their product. And embedded in their distribution agreement was this clause that said if there was a dispute, it had to be arbitrated, and the arbitration was to take place in Ontario, Canada. And I can't remember how, I guess the agreement was fairly recent. They'd had a falling out pretty early on in the relationship. So this maybe had been drafted in 1989 or 90, and quite, I guess, it was unique, but something that we in Ontario have talked about for years, that, you know, we're a modern jurisdiction in terms of arbitration, attuned to the international realm, and but we bring neutrality to the table when it comes to disputes between American companies and their counterparts overseas. So, you know, it's, you know, we're foreign but friendly, right? So this was, in that particular case, it was clear that whoever had drafted the contract had taken into account the fact that the American company didn't want to go to Korea to either litigate or arbitrate, and the Korean company likewise did not want to show up in the U.S. for the same reason, probably didn't want to have a jury trial if they ever had to face that. So here we were presented with this case that they were going to come to Toronto, and we were going to help as counsel for the Koreans in this proceeding. That was my introduction to the topic, really.
Right. And now, how much of your practice is international arbitration as opposed to domestic?
Well, if you include cross-border, and you know, that does count as international if it's Canadian and American entities involved. I would say right now about a third of the cases I'm handling are international, and two-thirds are domestic Canadian, between Canadian parties.
Yeah, I mean, I really was struck by Toronto. It's such an international city. You know, so it really does make sense. I get it. You know, instead of sort of New York, Chicago, or London, you know, you have this really very international. Maybe you want to speak a little bit to sort of the scene, the arbitration scene in Toronto, in terms of international arbitration.
Well, sure. I mean, certainly the city itself is very multicultural. I mean, there are people who have moved here from every corner of the globe. You know, if you want to go out to a restaurant for a particular kind of food, you can find it here. So we're very used to being adaptive and cognizant of you know, different cultures, and making sure everybody feels, you know, sort of welcome, and you know, so it's so the city has that attitude, I would guess. From a commercial aspect, Toronto is the financial capital of Canada, so all the major banks are headquartered here. The Toronto Stock Exchange is the largest stock exchange in the country. And, you know, all the other big financial institutions are based here, insurance companies, trust companies, credit unions, so forth. But also it's actually a world center for raising money for the mining industry. And so that brings in a lot of people from all over the world. And a lot of the international arbitrations that end up here that have otherwise no particular connection to the country or the city, you know, maybe, you know, will be involved in the mining industry. You know, a Canadian company that has a mine in West Africa, and a dispute arises, they're arbitrating it here. You know, because they've written that into their agreements. And so, one of the other aspects that makes it a good place to arbitrate is that we have very modern legislation. I mean, first of all, to step back a minute, arbitration law is a matter of provincial law here. All contract law is a matter of provincial law. So each province has an arbitration act for domestic disputes, and meaning all Canadian, and also an international arbitration act. And all jurisdictions have adopted the UNCITRAL model law. Now, in Ontario and British Columbia, they have recently adapted the more current version of the UNCITRAL model law, which, as I recall, I think dates from, is it 2006? But But so those, you know, it has the extra elements of interim relief in Articles 17 that you'll find that in Ontario and BC. You'll also find, and then you'll find the earlier version of the model law in the other provinces. So it's a jurisdiction that's very much attuned to what do we need to do to be at the forefront of international arbitration.
Right, and of course the New York Convention would apply in the international enforcement, so that makes that, you know,
yes,
very enforceable and you know, a really good kind of place for it. You know, a lot of students are very interested in international arbitration and they ask, you know, how do I get involved and sort of how do I dip my toe in and be selected as an arbitrator in the space? Do you have any advice for those students asking those questions?
Well, I suppose realistically, you need to spend some time as counsel working in the arbitration realm, appearing for clients and arguing the cases to gain experience and exposure to what the law entails, what the procedure entails, how it's different from litigation. But when I look at how my own practice has developed, you know, obviously I had the experience as counsel and, you know, had a certain, you know, profile in the community, but I've spent a lot of time heightening my presence within the arbitration community. So it's a big investment of time and money to attend a lot of conferences, participate in the VIS-MOOT, for example, as a volunteer arbitrator, or pre-moots. I mean, there's pre-moots in lots of American cities. I've been a volunteer arbitrator at the pre-moot in Miami, I think 3 times, for example, or coach a VIS team. That's another way to get some experience. Writing, of course, is important. It really does work. It, you know, people learn about you. They see that you can write. They see that you can express an opinion. And so there's lots of avenues for that. You know, the Kluwer arbitration blog comes out every day, and there are always people like that are always looking for content. Every newsletter editor out there will tell you, please submit something.
So absolutely, yeah.
So well, profile building is very important.
Yeah, you know, and that's a really great point. And you know, kind of going all in on arbitration mediation, you know, really setting up a website and really moving into that realm and not sort of, you know, using it as a side hustle sometimes is important as well.
Yeah, no, I think I've found that by leaving the Steichen Elliott partnership 6 years ago and going out on my own, I mean, that demonstrated that I was serious about this. It wasn't just dabbling. Because I think, you know, there's lots of people, lots of lawyers in firms that would love to be arbitrators, but I think the people who are hiring arbitrators might see somebody who's still within a firm, unless they already have a stellar reputation. You know, they're going to be hard pressed to get that work. Whereas I think it's been beneficial to me to be out on my own and independent, you know, somebody who has, you know, gone in with both feet. And, you know, this is who I am. This is what I do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen that time and time again with really sort of stellar arbitrators who have amazing careers and they've gone all in and really focused on that area. You know, and especially with international in terms of skills and honing the craft, with international arbitration in particular, there's always cross-cultural issues to consider as well. I wonder if you could speak to that or have any sort of tips or could provide any insights on how you approach those cross-cultural questions that come up when you are arbitrating an international case.
Well, I think it's just a question of being attuned to differences, not assuming that the way things are done elsewhere is the way you're familiar with how they're done. That would be, just being sensitive, I think, to nuance and difference. Is a big part of it. I mean, I think I'm very fortunate that I live in a city where that's kind of part of what you'd put up with or handle or have to deal with routinely, and it becomes quite comfortable and second nature. And you know, you're not stuck in a mindset of, well, this is how we do things around here, because it's not. And maybe it once was, I mean, right. There's no doubt that Toronto 60 years ago was a very different city than it is today.
Right. Yeah, it's way, I mean, I had told you before we started taping, you know, I had not been to Toronto since I was a very small young child. And then visiting it this summer, it was very, wow, it's really changed. It's very modern, very international, easy to get around, absolutely, you know, really a cross-cultural city. I think, you know, it's really that I love sort of that empathy and being attuned to what the parties need, I think is very important, especially from a problem solving perspective, because that's what you're doing when you're asked to be an arbitrator. And I wondered, because you also are a mediator. So how do you kind of balance the differences in demeanor that come into play when you're mediating versus arbitrating?
Well, you know, both roles involve a lot of listening, and I guess the principal difference is, I suppose, the timing that is involved with when you're being asked to express a view or an opinion. You know, as the arbitrator, you sit through the hearing, you listen to all the evidence, you listen to the submissions, and you go away and you write your award. Whereas in the mediation, at least the way I practice it, I get the briefs in from the parties, hopefully a couple of weeks before the mediation, and I go and spend time with every party individually to learn more about their side of the story, you know, try and get behind the curtain, so to speak, and then within the mediation, let people talk, let the parties talk. I mean, these are, you know, business people that this is an opportunity for them to kind of get it off their chest and speak their mind to a neutral person who's going to be empathetic to them and listen to what they have to say. I mean, that's a cathartic experience for a lot of people. And they can finally feel like, okay, somebody has heard me, and now we can get on and find a solution.
Yeah.
But the thing about a mediation, though, is that there's a lot of persuasion involved, and sometimes you just can't bridge the gap.
No. And I wonder your view also kind of with the theme of international and thinking about sort of cross-cultural cases and thinking about, you know, sort of approaches. There's more mediation these days in international cases, of course, especially with the Singapore Convention. I wonder if you had any views or any thoughts on that. Have you seen growth in international mediation?
Well, it's certainly been part of the landscape here for a long, long time. So I wouldn't necessarily say there's more, but there's certainly a better awareness of it, and it's a common feature. We've had in Ontario civil litigation in Toronto, we've had mandatory mediation for decades, and you know, when it was brought in, there was a lot of resistance. You know, you can't lead a horse to water, you can't force people to negotiate, but eventually people saw that, you know, if you just get people talking, you can get over some barriers. So there's a lot of buy-in to the process here. I mean, you know, Canada has not signed the Singapore Mediation Convention yet. I'm not sure it may never, because, you know, the elements that are a feature of that convention are almost kind of embedded here already. Now, you know, leaving aside the maybe the enforcement mechanism, but again, coming back to Ontario, we've had on the books for quite a long time a commercial mediation act that adopts the UNCITRAL model law on conciliation. And that does have a feature that in it that, you know, if you have a settlement from a mediation that's not being complied with, you can take it to the court and easily get it enforced. So we've, you know, and that's a big feature of the Singapore Convention. We've had it already.
Yeah. That's old news for you. Yeah, that's really, I mean, it's incredibly important, and it, you know, another feature in sort of thinking through problem solving and, you know, different tools that you have in your toolbox in Ontario and Toronto. Do you find yourself doing Med-Arb or Arb-Med or Med-Arb-Med or any mixed, or not a whole lot?
No, that I have not stepped into that realm yet. I was talking with a friend a couple of weeks ago, a fellow member of Arbitration Place, who has done quite a number of those, and he was saying, you know, they can be very tricky. So, make sure you're up to speed before you jump into that pool. So I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, no, it is funny. Some people, they love it. They do it all the time. And others are, you know, there's issues with the confidentiality and all the sort of difference. It's definitely a different hat to wear. And it's a different experience, mediation versus arbitration. In class, I have students with one fact pattern. They do an exercise where first they try to mediate it, and then they switch up roles, and then they have to try to arbitrate it. And it's really fun and interesting to get the insights from the students and sort of how different students prefer arbitration or prefer mediation, and how it really, you know, they're different animals. They're not the same thing.
Oh, yeah, completely different animals.
So any sort of other last pieces of advice, if you were sort of talking about, you know, really tips and important things, other than kind of thinking through being in tune to differences and different styles? For example, do you think having a tripartite, having a three arbitrator panel is helpful in international cases? Or do you have any other sort of insights that you've learned over the years in terms of the process when it's international?
Well, certainly. I mean, in fact, I recall a case from the case that I had that was under the Stockholm rules and administered by the Stockholm Chamber of Commerce Arbitration Institute. I was a party appointed arbitrator. The other party for a Canadian entity, the other party appointed arbitrator was a retired judge from Sweden, and the counterparty was Swedish. And our chair was a lawyer based in Paris. And the case involved not only some elements of Canadian law, but also Swedish law. So it was, you know, very helpful in our deliberations to have somebody, I could speak to the sort of the common law issues that we needed to address. And the other two, you know, were obviously, you know, attuned to the civilian law issues. And, you know, I think it led us to a stronger outcome, a better award, because, people were able to bring a relevant background that the others didn't have. And we could share that, collaborate to get to what I thought was quite a good award.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I would think also with language, that becomes important as well.
Yeah, although interestingly, you know, in that case, although the parties were from Canada and Sweden, and there were witnesses from Canada and Germany and lawyers here and Sweden and whatever. Anyways, the whole thing was done in English.
I was sort of going to suspect that, to be honest.
Everybody was completely fluent. I mean, I felt embarrassed that I couldn't, speak in anybody else's native language, but
It is very impressive. When I'm in Europe, and a lot of my friends, I'm just impressed. A lot of my friends speak 5-6 languages, and it's really very impressive. And they can easily toggle among languages, and I really admire that.
it's something to behold, and somebody effortlessly changes from, you know, German to French to English and back again.
Yeah, and with a perfect accent.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, listen, I really appreciate your taking time and discussing international arbitration, and Toronto is really a hub for international arbitration. Really impressive, the work that you're doing with the Toronto Commercial Arbitration Society and your Gold Standard course. And I really appreciate your sharing your insights today. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Amy. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This podcast was brought to you by Arbitrate.com. For more information about Arbitrate.com's programs and content, please visit our website at www.arbitrate.com.